From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. A new ABC drama premieres today. Alaska Daily is set in an Alaska newspaper. It stars Hilary Swank as a hard-charging investigative reporter fresh from New York City, but quick to see that her new state has far too many cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women. The series is fiction, loosely based on the Anchorage Daily News. KTOO's Rhonda McBride talked with two Alaska Native writers who have worked on the show.
The common thread between Andrew McLean and Vera Starbard, a desire to tell authentically Alaskan stories.
Overall, I really hope people see in this, in some way, the Alaska that I love.
Vera Starbard is a Tlingit playwright whose career took off when she was tapped to write episodes for the PBS hit children's series Molly from Denali. Her writing partner, Andrew McLean, is Inupiat, known for his award-winning film from 2011, On the Ice. And even though he's familiar with making movies, McLean says nothing prepared him for a TV series like this.
Somebody compared it to building a train while it's hurtling down the track, and I think that's kind of right.
Even as the show premieres, McLean and Starbard are hard at work on upcoming episodes for the season that are yet to be shot.
It's literally hour by hour. You don't totally know what you're going to be doing. So you might show up and think you're going to work on episode 9. And in fact, there's an urgent thing they need to figure out for episode 5 that they're shooting right now. So we need to address that. You're sort of figuring out what you're doing as it comes.
For the past few months, both Starbard and McLean have been sequestered in what they call the writing room in downtown New York City, where they work with producers and writers that they describe as some of the best in the business. But even so, it hasn't been easy to teach them about Alaska.
The need to kind of educate and to make sure that we're being truthful about our depictions of so many different communities, so many different peoples and tribes and ethnicities and so many different lived realities, it can be overwhelming. That probably causes us to lose the most sleep. That causes me to
lose the most sleep over.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roz, I want to put you on a story with Eileen.
Another missing, murdered Native woman.
And we need to show who's to blame.
I work alone. Do you know anything about Alaska?
She always liked this?
McLean says millions of people will watch this show.
And that's a powerful thing. A powerful opportunity to educate and a powerful opportunity just to reach out and to kind of tell our stories. Hopefully tell our stories in a truthful, authentic way.
I have such a strong belief, and it's so much of the reason I do the work that I do, that Alaska Native people have amazing, wonderful, beautiful, extraordinary things to give to the world.
And that includes a sense of humor. Just before she left New York City to go home, the crew gave her a card with a word in Tlingit.
And it just says chuk on it, which means go away. And I was like, I taught them too much.
Vera Starbard finds it ironic that to tell stories about Alaska, she had to go all the way to New York City, where she was asked to treat the state as more than just a backdrop, but a character in its own right. In Juneau, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Alaska Daily airs at 9 tonight on ABC stations, and it also streams on Hulu tomorrow. 79 million sockeye returned to Bristol Bay this summer. It was the largest run on record, and it's great news for the commercial industry. But as KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the record run was also reigniting conversations about big disparities in who gets to fish and how the state's limited entry system has affected the communities closest to the runs.
For a long time, Alaska had no limits on how many people could sign up to commercial fish. Dillingham resident and Chukyong tribal member William P. Johnson has fished since he was a kid in the 1940s.
In the early years, there were many people who were participating in the fishery, and they hired their local people from their village to participate with them.
But in the 1960s, the number of out-of-state fishermen was growing, while salmon runs were shrinking. And in 1972, Alaskans voted for the state to amend the Constitution to start limiting how many commercial fishing permits were allowed in regions like Bristol Bay, a system called limited entry. The goal was to reduce the pressure on fisheries and financially sustain the fishermen who depended on them. But in the 50 years since, local permit ownership in Bristol Bay has actually declined by half.
With the out-migration, you can see the effect that it has on the monetary return to the individual village people through their commercial fishermen.
The new system quickly and fundamentally changed the Bristol Bay fishery and the communities that relied on it, according to Rachel Donkersloat. She led the latest study on the impacts of limited entry. Donkersloat's report says 7 years into the program, Alaska Native permit holdings in Bristol Bay had already declined by 21%.
As is often the case, these types of management systems don't serve villages. In fact, they tend to undermine village fishing livelihoods and village sustainability.
According to Donkersloat and other researchers, there were issues with the new system from the beginning. The permit application was confusing and ended up favoring non-rural fishermen. Fred Teresi came to Dillingham as a lawyer with the state's legal services in the 1970s and remembers helping local fishermen through the change. He says before limited entry, anyone could fish as long as they had a boat. Limited entry introduced permits people only received once. The permit application was supposed to favor rural fishermen, but Teresi says it fell short.
It was a kind of a complicated application by design because it was meant to determine who really needed a permit, who really had been relying on it in the past.
The state tried to address those problems. It created the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission as part of the new system, which held legal hearings in rural Alaska to handle legal challenges. But limited entry meant that permits were freely transferable, so they could be bought, gifted, or inherited. That meant that many local people who didn't have access to other sources of income sold their permits and could not afford to buy back into the fishery. Johnson, the Dillingham fisherman, says he was able to hold on to his permit during that time because he worked all year round. But many local fishermen weren't able to do so.
People, because of poor runs, began selling their permits. And, of course, that impacted mainly the local people. They couldn't afford to make a living fishing, and so they ended up, many of them, ended up selling their permits just to get by for a couple of years.
In the nearly 50 years since the change, the value of Bristol Bay's fishery has grown exponentially. But most of that revenue leaves the state. Donkersloat says residents of Bristol Bay also tend to earn less than urban and non-resident fishermen, even though fishing is more likely to be their only source of income.
What matters most in terms of the benefits from fisheries is where the permit holder lives. It's not where fish are landed. It's not these other factors at play. It's where the permit holder lives.
When limited entry was implemented, the report says the state didn't build in safeguards to help local operators continue to fish. Donkersloat says the gap in access to the fishery between locals and other fishermen often boils down to financial circumstances, like access to capital and credit history. Donkersloat says when the state crafted limited entry, it also didn't take into account cultural differences around fishing.
That gets back to kind of the misfit between trying to support rural fishery participation and programs like limited entry, which individualize and commodify the right to fish.
The outmigration of fishing permits from rural Alaska is a controversial and complex topic that legislators, Alaska Native community leaders, residents, and economists have repeatedly tried to address. Donkersloat says in order to address the disparity, the public policy surrounding the fishery needs to change.
This is about, you know, sustainable economic development in Bristol Bay, and you cannot have that conversation without thinking about fisheries.
The report lays out a few paths forward that Donkersloat says have worked in other regions and countries that have dealt with similar problems. They include provisions for small-scale operations, apprenticeship permits, and creating locally designated permits. As the fishery celebrates another huge run, Donkersloat says it's important to think about who is able to participate in the fishery and why. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
And here in Juneau, it's currently 56 degrees and overcast, and there's a dense fog advisory in effect from tomorrow morning at 4 a.m. until tomorrow at 10 a.m. Tomorrow it's expected to be sunny with a high near 57 degrees. But rain is likely to come back tomorrow night. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery.